Castellano, counsel for the appellant.
Morning, may it please the court. I'm Captain Michael Berry for the appellant, Corporal Castellano. The trier of fact should determine whether the Markman factors are satisfied because they function just like elements. And even if they're not elements, they're mixed questions of law and fact that should go to a blue ribbon panel of members to decide. The Markman factors act just like elements because sodomy is not a crime unless certain facts exist. In other words, they involve questions of fact that determine whether a crime occurred. In Miller versus California, the Supreme Court held that judicially created factors, such as those identified in Markman, should be determined by a trier of fact. In this case, the constitutionality of sexual conduct...
Sodomy is not a crime unless certain factors exist.
Unless certain facts exist, Your Honor.
Certain facts exist. Yeah, the fact of unnatural sexual intercourse. The statute doesn't make any exceptions. The statute simply says he who engages in unnatural sexual intercourse is guilty of sodomy. So how's that an element? How's Markman an element? I mean, you know, the statute's written in such a sweeping fashion, you know, leaving aside, you know, whether it ought to be, that, you know, how's that really an element?
Your Honor, when this court applied Lawrence v. Texas to the military in Markman, the only way post-Lawrence that a statute such as Article 125 could pass constitutional muster is if those factors, the three questions that this court identified in Markman, do in fact become elements or at the very least mixed questions of law and fact. And the facts that have to be determined should go to the tribe, should go to the members if it's a member's case.
Do you agree with the following, that there are three possibilities? One is that something is an element, in which case the government has to prove it beyond a reasonable doubt. Two, there are such things as affirmative defenses or defenses that the appellant, the accused, usually has the burden of demonstrating. And then there are constitutional principles which could make something that was otherwise criminal constitutionally protected. For example, speech sometimes falls into that category.
Yes,
why does this fit into the elements category rather than the affirmative defense category, rather than the constitutional factors that might make something constitutionally protected, notwithstanding its general criminal, otherwise generally viewed as criminal conduct?
Your Honor, this could certainly fit within the affirmative defense type category. That's one option that the military judge had. My argument is that it is more akin to an element, because this case is analogous to the case of United States versus Berry. In that case, the court held that even though open and notorious were not elements per se of the crime of indecent acts, that because not every indecent act is punishable as a crime, that there must be a finding by the trier of fact that the act was indeed open and notorious in order to criminalize that.
Well, but that's a 134 offense. You got to tie it to the statutory language, and open and notorious is one way of tying it to the statutory language. 125 is different.
Well, if Your Honor, I agree that 134 offenses are typically different. But even in the context of offenses such as Articles 129 and 130, so burglary and housebreaking, in those cases, under those statutes, the term lawfulness, whether the breaking and entering was lawful, is nevertheless a question that goes to the trier of fact. But the government argues that the lawfulness of an act is a pure question of law for the military judge to decide as an interlocutory question. Well, if that's true, then under 129 and 130, we've been doing it wrong for years.
What about, if it's a context where, under your analysis, a context where it's off base, it's a husband and wife, the home has been sealed with blackout blinds, and the charge is one of sodomy. And it's your view that that should go to the members to determine if that was constitutionally protected?
I'm sorry, Your Honor, you said it was a husband and wife
in the case?
Well, under United States versus Scobie, it appears that that would be protected. But under Markham, perhaps under the third prong or the third question of Markham, if there were additional factors relevant solely in the military that somehow brought that out.
Those are all the factors. They truly, completely consensual. One is a military member, the other is not a military member. But as I understand your argument, you're saying, even though that seems to be darn constitutionally protected under Lawrence, it still goes to members to determine that question.
That is correct, Your Honor. The members will get to determine that because, again,
what would the judge say to the members, or how would the judge instruct the members in that context? What's the question of fact that the members are supposed to address in that context?
Your Honor, a model instruction perhaps in that scenario would be, there would be several questions. It would be a two or three or four pronged analysis. It would be, members, not every act of non-forcible sodomy is a crime. And to convict the accused, you must answer the following questions. First, was the conduct private? Second, did it occur aboard a military installation or vessel? Third, pointing some of the facts of this case, because it occurred in Japan, did the conduct have a negative impact on the United States relationship with Japan?
I see what you mean. So you would turn it into factual questions for the members, and then you just take your chance that a members panel in the Marine Corps would come out one way and a members panel in the Army would come out another way and so on, and that's just how it breaks.
Is the defense taking the position?
Go ahead.
Allow me to answer your question. I'm sorry.
Your Honor, it would be...
I'm happy.
It would be more appropriate to have a blue ribbon panel of members to decide that than a military judge, Your Honor, because the government argued in its brief that allowing the military judge to make this determination would allow for more consistency and predictability in the results. But that there are three problems with that argument, Your Honor. First, that presumes uniformity within the trial judiciary, which is simply not the case. Second, when the convening authority picks a members panel, he is, in fact, picking a blue ribbon panel of members. They are chosen for their experience, their maturity, wisdom, and their judicial temperament. And finally, the constitutionality of conduct of this nature is determined by contemporary community standards. Well, the contemporary community standards are, in fact, the members panel, not the military judge.
So it's the defense position that under the circumstances that Chief Judge Baker has raised, the military judge could not say, under Lawrence and Markham, this is unconstitutional, period, end of case. Have to send it to the members.
He certainly could do that, Your Honor.
Okay. Then what is it that distinguishes when he can do it, or she, and when cannot? What are the criteria that you use as a military judge for determining when the judge makes the decision and when the judge sends it to the members?
That approach, Your Honor, would be more akin to the affirmative defense scenario that Chief Judge Baker addressed. And so that would be where, if there's been some evidence raised by the defense, and applied to the facts of this case, he was charged as forcible sodomy. So the defense was, it wasn't forcible, it was consensual sodomy. So when there's been some evidence presented or raised with respect to the element of consent, then the military judge would make that threshold determination and then send the questions of fact. Those factual determinations would go to the members along the lines of the model instruction that I presented a few moments ago.
So you don't think that if it was clearly protected under Lawrence or Markham that the military judge would be remiss in his duties if he allowed it to go to the members? I mean, doesn't he have a duty if it's clearly constitutionally protected and therefore clearly not criminal? Doesn't he have a duty to dismiss the charge?
Yes, Your Honor. And this court identified in United States versus Hartman that he would similarly have a duty to reject a guilty plea, to find that an accused is improvident if the guilty plea colloquy didn't reflect the Markham factors either. So it would be a similar analysis. It's just that the facts Specifically, whether it was private, whether it was consensual, those are facts for...
The facts that Judge Baker just laid out for you, I mean, what's there to quibble about in those facts? I mean, those facts are clearly Lawrence Markham facts, right?
Correct, Your Honor.
So how could the military judge send that to the members to decide?
With an instruction along the, that they're the ones that make the ultimate determination as to whether the requisite facts exist to establish them.
The issue is one of constitutionality, which seems to be an issue of law, or at very best a mixed issue of fact and law. So why kick it to the members?
Well, it wouldn't be the constitutionality is with respect to the constitutionality of Article 125, but the
as applied.
But that's right, Your Honor. And the application of that would then be a fact-intensive inquiry that should be done by the members.
I think we're mixing two different things here. One is if the parties all agree there's nothing more than a private consensual act with no other military relationship, at that point, is there any reason why the judge can't decide the case right at that point on the issue of constitutionality?
Certainly could, Your Honor. If the defense in those situations could move for a finding of not guilty, if
that's all that's alleged and all that the government wants to prove. But if there's a dispute between the parties as to where it took place, who may have seen, what impact it may have had on a unit, et cetera, then that's a different case.
Correct, Your Honor. And that highlights one of the problems within the facts of this case is that the charge here was a force, which is one of the Markham factors. The government's theory of prosecution was that it was sodomy by force. The defense successfully defended itself. The accused defended himself against that Markham factor, the element of force. But then the military judge allowed the government to proceed on that by saying that he thought that he heard some evidence of military connection, and somehow it then brought the conduct outside of...
Well, this is where I'm having a little trouble trying to figure out why Miller is the linchpin of this case as opposed to Jones and Fossler and Humphreys and all those other cases in which we said when we're dealing with lesser included offenses or we're dealing with offenses and the description of conduct that constitutes criminality, there has to be notice in the charge. We have to have the evidence. We have to have instructions. And so I was wondering if you might discuss the issue of how this fits under those cases.
Certainly, Your Honor. It would be analogous to Humphreys with one significant distinction. In Humphreys, the members were instructed on the terminal elements of 134. Here, they were not. So when this court said that under a Humphreys analysis, we can look to the extant record to see if there's been any evidence presented to establish the terminal elements, that can be done in a case where the members were instructed on them. But here, the members were not instructed on all the Markham factors except for force. So, but by allowing the government to prosecute him or proceed under military connection, under the third Markham factor, he didn't have and that really goes into what the prejudice is here, is that he did not have the opportunity to defend himself against that Markham factor. And the military judge, although the military judge incorporated it into the prosecution by saying that somehow he thought it fell outside of Lawrence.
Don't those cases stand for the proposition that instructions aren't sufficient if the aspect of criminality isn't in the charge?
Yes, Your Honor. So, and in this case, the instruction was deficient because it included... it didn't include aspects of or questions of fact that the members are responsible for determining. The military judge answered that what this turned into was a trial in which the appellant was defending himself against the military judge who had already predetermined that he had found those facts to be present, and all the members were left to do is to say, well, then the only thing we have to determine is did the act occur, because that's what the language of the statute says, is just, was there the act?
Well, what aspect of, in light of the repeal of Section 654 of Title 10, is every act of unnatural copulation described in Article 125 still a crime in the military?
Sorry,
in light of the repeal of Section 654 of Title 10, the statute that precluded homosexuality in the armed forces and that required mandatory discharge, in light of that repeal, what remains of the offense under Article 125 of so-called unnatural carnal copulation? Is every such act still a crime in the military after that repeal?
Yes, but if and only if the Markham factors, one or more of the Markham factors exist, Your Honor. So either it was non-consensual, it was there was disparity in rank such that consent was not easily refused, coercion, or some other military connection that brought it outside of the warrant.
And if those factors aren't set forth in the charge, how does the individual know what to defend himself or herself against if that charge is brought just under Article 125 without any specific circumstances set forth in the charge?
The accused would not know, Your Honor. And in this case, the only thing that that appellant knew he was defending against was force. And that's what he successfully defended himself against.
Counsel, I have a question about that. In this particular case, you don't disagree that the specification as alleged is outside of Markham, do you? Forcible sodomy?
I agree with that, Your Honor.
So in your view, at what point in time and on what degree of evidence does this issue get raised? Do you understand my question?
Yes, Your Honor.
So, I mean, for example, the charge is forcible sodomy. You're not suggesting that the other Markham factors have to be given to the members, are you?
No, Your Honor.
So at what point in time and at what level of evidence is it, in your view, does the charge need to be amended? Do things need to be instructed on, et cetera, et cetera?
Well, that's what would bring this case into analogous to the Foster-Humphrey line of cases, Your Honor, that yes, it would need to be alleged at the time of charging, and then after evidence has been presented on that, then at that point it would probably be okay for the government to move forward with that. But if the government charges one particular theory, so under Russell versus United States, the government is not allowed to change its theory of prosecution mid-trial.
So in this case, then in your view, the government would have needed to charge in the alternative, one, that it was by force, or two, even if it wasn't, that it was had a service connection or whatever element it was they were relying on?
Yes, and I see that my time is expiring.
Please.
May I answer the question? Thank you. Yes, Your Honor, and that's what we've now established is what must be done with Article 134 when it comes to the terminal element, Your Honor, is that we say that the government needs to make it clear which clause or clauses under the terminal element are under Article 134 it's going to prosecute an accused under, so such that this type of situation doesn't arise in which a military judge can say, I know you've been charged with forcible sodomy, and I'm going to instruct on consensual sodomy as an LIO, when in fact consensual sodomy is not really even an LIO.
Well, I mean, technically, yes, it is, right? I mean, to take away the element of force, and what's left is sodomy without force, right?
Well, I guess yes, Your Honor, follow that.
I mean, I'm just trying to figure out how this works, right? In this case, a guy was charged with forcible sodomy, and his defense was, no, it wasn't forcible, it was consensual, right?
That's correct, Your Honor.
Right? In your view, at that point in time, if the government wanted to amend the charge or the specification to add in whatever Markham factors or factors that took it outside of Markham and Lawrence, would you think that they were able to do that?
Not without the accused's consent, Your Honor, because that would constitute a major change to the charge. That would be fundamentally altering their theory of the case, their theory of prosecution.
Are you saying that, you seem to be saying, but then you said something else, Judge Heffron, that having to defend against consensual sodomy was itself wrong because consensual sodomy without more isn't an offense.
That's correct, Your Honor.
Okay, so consensual sodomy isn't an offense. Okay. The problem is you got a statute that says it is.
That's correct, Your Honor.
Right.
And that's why the Markham factors, and really to conclude, that's exactly why the Markham factors should be treated like elements, because without them, consensual.
Well, the interesting thing is that Congress has been repeatedly asked to amend this statute or repeal it, and they have repeatedly refused. And so where does that leave us?
Well, presumably that's because of the existence of a case like Markham, Your Honor, in which there's no.
I would venture that most members of Congress wouldn't know Markham from Adam. But go ahead.
To conclude, the appellant has a statutory right to have the members determine his guilt. In this case, the military judge deprived him of that right. Accordingly, this court should reverse the decision of the court below.
Thank you, counsel. Counsel for the government.
Good morning, Chief Judge Baker, Your Honors. My name is Major Krista Crace, and I, together with Colonel Stephen Newman, represent the government. This court can affirm the findings and sentence below because the Markham factors represent a question of law for the military judge, not a question of fact for the members. The United States will focus its argument on three areas. First, the Markham factors are not criminal elements of Article 125. Second, the purpose behind the Markham factor analysis is not to determine the guilt or innocence of the accused as to the crime of sodomy, but whether that conduct is constitutionally protected pursuant to Texas v. Lawrence. And finally, consistency. This court should consider that the Markham factors remain a question of law for the military judge alone in order to ensure consistent application throughout the military justice system. First, the Markham factors are not criminal elements of Article 125. There is but a single element to Article 125, and that is that an individual engaged in unnatural carnal copulation with another.
You don't disagree that that fact without more, that the maximum punishment authorized is zero?
Correct, Your Honor. Yes,
okay,
Your Honor.
And so then if you add in the Markham factor, then what's the maximum punishment?
Adding in, well, Your Honor, consensual sodomy is 5 years. There's a maximum punishment for the consensual sodomy with the single element as charged is 5 years.
Okay, so if there was consensual sodomy under the circumstances described by Judge Baker, okay, earlier, right, a husband and a wife off base in a house with blackout curtains, what, in your view, is the maximum constitutionally authorized punishment for that offense?
As stated, if found guilty, would be 5 years. However, under those particular facts, that charge would arguably be dismissed because a military judge would conduct a constitutional analysis and find that that particular private sexual conduct was protected under the Constitution and would not go forward to the members.
And therefore, there would be zero punishment authorized, right?
At that point, the charge would be dismissed and there would actually be no punishment on the table.
Okay, so then you take away those facts and you add in one of the other facts, which is instead of a husband and a wife, it's a major and a lance corporal that works for him.
Yes, Your Honor. Well, there we do. We have the Markham analysis, and we have the single element of sodomy is that an individual engaged in unnatural carnal copulation with another. What Markham and Texas v. Lawrence supplies is an exception to a finding of guilt as to the single element.
And I understand that you probably don't want to carry on this discussion because you know where it is that I'm going, but you don't disagree that if we change that fact, that then the 5-year maximum punishment is back in play, right?
If we
changed it so that now instead of a husband and a wife, it's a major and the lance corporal that works for him who's not his wife.
Well, we're then looking at the conduct is still punishable. That does not change. What changes is that the law, as it exists, carves out an exception. So an individual still can be held, criminally liable under that single element of sodomy as it exists.
So under the scenario that I just described, you would agree that the 5-year maximum punishment is now in play again, right?
Yes, Your Honor, because an individual would be guilty of the crime if they did, as the element states, engage in unnatural carnal copulation with another.
Okay, and It's not, whether it's an element or not, right, whether we're calling it an element or not, if you look at the Apprendi line of cases, no one was suggesting that the amount of drugs, right, or the aggravating factors that they were elements. They didn't call them elements, did they?
Your Honor, those aggravating factors were considered by that court to be functional elements because it took the maximum possible punishment found by the jury in that case. It allowed the judge then, after their findings on guilt or innocence, to substantially increase the punishment that they could face. That is why that court determined that those were functional elements, a fact that should have been found.
They weren't functional elements. They were the functional equivalent of elements, right? Because,
yes,
because they changed the sentence. They changed the maximum punishment that could be awarded, right?
Yes, Your Honor.
And so then the Supreme Court said when that's the case, those facts need to be decided by the members and proven beyond a reasonable doubt. And they didn't call them elements, but they treated them like elements, didn't they?
They did. They treated them like elements.
So there's a fourth category to the three categories of Judge Baker list, right? There's things that are elements. There's affirmative defenses. There are things that would otherwise be criminal that are somehow constitutionally protected and decriminalized. And there are things that are none of the above but are treated like elements. Why aren't these factors in that category? And I'm not saying that they are. I'm just asking you to explain how when punishment for, authorized for one is nothing, and for the other is 5 years, why it's not a Jones Apprendi situation.
Well, Your Honor, pursuant to RCM 307, the government is obligated to charge the element of the crime and any aggravating facts which may increase the punishment. So that is exactly what the government did here. They charged appellant with the single element and added the additional facts of by force and without consent of the victim. At that point, that's distinguished from the concern raised in the Apprendi line of cases because those did not go, those concerns, those aggravating factors that can increase the punishment did not go before that jury. Here, you have those facts on the charge sheet going to the jury.
Well, and I agree with you that this case is complicated by the fact that the government did put an aggravating fact, right?
Yes.
And then that aggravating fact was had some of its legs taken away by the fact that the accused said, well, yes, this did happen, but it was consensual, right? And then the military judge found an additional fact, right, an additional aggravating fact, and determined that on his own, didn't he?
The Markham factor.
Yeah.
Yes, ma'am. The nature of the active duty status of all parties involved, living out in the local Japanese community. Yes, Your Honor.
So what do you do then?
With respect to the
military judge now has found a different aggravating factor on his own that has not gone to the jury, the members.
Well, not necessarily, Your Honor, because this preliminary finding by the military judge related to the Markham analysis should be viewed similar to many other mixed questions of law and fact that a military judge must make on many other issues. For example, whether personal jurisdiction exists. He must make that determination before charges of desertion or unauthorized absence can then be forwarded to the members. Or another example would be, as in United States versus New, the military judge had to make a preliminary ruling on whether an order was lawful before the findings on guilt or innocence, violation of that order, had actually occurred. So this is analogous. The Markham factor analysis by a military judge is no different than many of those other multiple preliminary rulings that a military judge must undertake in every trial.
But you don't disagree that in terms of the offense that the government did choose to put on the charge sheet, which was forcible sodomy, that the element of force would need to be found by the members, right?
Force is not an element, Your Honor. Force is a presidentially prescribed aggravating factor that, in addition to with a minor, can also be alleged on the charge sheet if the government
can
is...
Can you answer my question, which is who needs to make that determination?
Whether force occurred would be made by the members or the trier of fact were it to be a military judge in the case.
As I understand at the beginning of your prior answer, it's that if there is an allegation of consensual sodomy and nothing more than that, a military judge is obligated to dismiss the charge.
Without the military nexus.
And so there must be something other than what's on the face of Article 125 that makes it a criminal offense. And how does one get notice of that, and how does a court-martial panel make decisions as to whether that did or did not occur?
Your Honor, it's the single element of Article 125 is the crime. What case law does, what the Markham factors do, is it provides the military judge a mechanism as a matter of law to conduct a constitutional analysis regarding whether there is an exception to the alleged criminal conduct, similar to an individual being charged for a speech violation or disrespect of a senior official, perhaps. And the military judge would do an analysis whether that speech was protected, could make that preliminary determination, and decide on his own whether an exception is carved out for that conduct. So it's not that the Markham factors are further criminalizing the conduct. That conduct is codified in Article 125 by Congress that an individual that engages in a natural carnal copulation will be found guilty by a court-martial.
And in a speech case, the military judge could determine that the speech is protected, or, as in Parker against Levy, the specific content of the speech be set forth in the specification, and the court members would be instructed to first determine whether that speech did or did not take place, and secondly, to determine whether it's either 133 or 134, whether it was either conduct unbecoming or whether it was prejudicial to good order and discipline or service discrediting. Those are the things that make it criminal, not the speech, not simply giving the speech. Here, there is a sexual act which the military judge would be obligated to dismiss a charge on if nothing more is at issue. And so under principles of notice and due process, how does the current treatment of Article 125 fit in if the military judge is obligated to dismiss the pure act?
Well, Your Honor, as mentioned, Congress has had multiple opportunities to adapt or change Article 125. As recently as June of 2012, they did indeed change Article 120 of the UCMJ, yet they left 125 alone. At no time since this Court's decision in Markham in 2004 has Congress even attempted to include the Markham factors as elements of the crime, and they have left it alone with the single element. Therefore, by charging the single element and any additional facts that might increase the maximum punishment, the government is doing as they are required by RCM 307, and appellant is on sufficient notice to defend himself of the crime itself.
And what additional facts were alleged in this case that found their way into the findings that were returned by the members?
Members did find appellant not guilty of the by force and without consent, and instead convicted him of the lesser included offense of consensual sodomy based upon the instruction by the military judge stating that they could consider the lesser included offense of consensual sodomy.
Do you disagree that there's no reason based on the instructions that were given for us to be certain that the members didn't convict him of consensual sodomy, period, with no additional Markham factors? I mean, they weren't instructed on the Markham factors, were they?
They were not, no, ma'am.
So in this case, it is entirely possible that they would not have found beyond a reasonable doubt that any of those factors existed.
Your Honor, the record is silent to that, but we do know that the military judge wrote in detail in the record at 1008 through 1009 his specific reasonings for finding each of those three prongs of the Markham analysis. He allowed both counsel ample opportunity to argue their position and ultimately determined that he found the military nexus met, and that based on that, he was going to instruct the members that they could consider the lesser included offense.
I understand that. Now, as the military judge determined the existence of those facts for purposes of military judges' conclusions of law, Did the military judge determine those facts for the purpose of determining whether they were demonstrated by the government beyond a reasonable doubt?
No, Your Honor. The military judge made that determination, as military judges do many other questions of law. He was focused on analyzing the facts in order to determine whether appellant's conduct possibly rated an exception, a constitutionally protected status pursuant to this court's decision in Markham. And what he did, he wasn't making any distinction or raising an opinion as to the guilt or innocence. He was following the statute, that single element. He conducted the Markham analysis. He considered a question of law, and he duly instructed the members that they could consider it.
So, for example, as a parallel in the speech case, military judge is asked to dismiss a charge based upon violation of Article 133 and 134. Military judge would make a determination as to whether the facts as alleged constitute a military offense. In a motion dismissed, the military judge would determine whether there's any evidence that would support that charge. But the military judge would not be deciding at that point whether those facts were demonstrated beyond a reasonable doubt. Would the judge, is that correct?
Yes, Your Honor. The prior fact would be determining whether the elements of the crime were proven beyond a reasonable doubt. And again, going back to the fact that the crime of Article 125 lie in the single element, that an individual engaged in that conduct, and that pursuant to the Markham analysis, the military judge, as a matter of law, analyzes the conduct and determines whether that appellant, his conduct is subject to an exception. He is not further criminalizing the conduct, but he is determining whether he has an exception, and therefore those facts are protected under Markham and Lawrence and will not go to the members.
Why instead wouldn't the rule be that he would look at the evidence and see if there was, you know, some evidence that there was a Markham factor there, sufficient for it to go to the members and then instruct them on the Markham factors and have them decide?
Your Honor, this is a matter of constitutional magnitude. And this
Well, I mean, you don't disagree that whether it was on or off base is a question of fact, right?
Yes, ma'am.
Whether the people are or are not in a subordinate relationship is a factual question.
Yes, Your Honor.
And the answers to the factual questions have legal consequences, but they're still questions of fact.
Yes, Your Honor. And that would be similar to those instances, those mixed questions of law and fact, such as personal jurisdiction or determining the lawfulness of an order, that a military judge routinely determines as a preliminary interlocutory decision prior to forwarding the case to the members for deliberations.
Counsel, how do you reconcile Miller and New, or do you?
Well, Your Honor, this, of course, the United States considers New to be favorable to the position that a military judge's determination that whether an order is lawful is a question of law, one that he must make as a mixed question of law and fact prior to forwarding the case to the members. Miller is distinguishable because in that case, the community standard idea goes to a specific element of the crime. Here, the Markham factors are not an element of the crime as
well. Well, but don't the Markham factors go to the one element of the crime? Everybody admits the statute only has one element in it. And the third Markham factor basically operates to say that an act meeting the one element is criminal or isn't. I mean, where does that leave you?
Well, Your Honor, the statute is as Congress intended, and absent change by Congress adapting Article 125 to include the Markham factors as criminal elements, this court must look to the black letter statutory language, and the government is accountable to charge the element of sodomy, which they did, and any additional facts that may increase the maximum punishment, which we did here, force and without consent.
We don't disagree that there could be
Go ahead, Meg.
I mean, there could be a statute that said, you know, the possession of obscenity is illegal, right?
Yes, Your Honor.
But the judge would still need to instruct the members on what the definition of obscenity was, and they would have to decide whether it met that standard. Right? That's not changing the elements. It's determining whether it falls within the criminal conduct described by the statute.
No, Your Honor, there's a distinction there that they are providing a definition. Providing a definition is not creating an altogether new criminal element. So that's where Miller is distinguished, is in that case, community standards regarding obscenity is providing elaboration on community standards as a criminal element as it is written in that statute. Here, the marker factors go to a legal analysis regarding whether conduct is constitutionally protected. They are not elaborating on any element in there.
So in your view, what is it that we're to do? On the one hand, we have a Supreme Court decision that says that voluntary sodomy, right, without more, is constitutional, can't constitutionally be made unlawful, right?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay, and we have a statute that on its face purports to do just that.
Yes,
you're relying on the fact that Congress hasn't changed the statute to say that that's the statute that we're stuck with, right?
Yes, Your Honor.
So should we say that the statute overall is unconstitutional? I mean, are those our alternatives? That either we treat these additional things not as elements, but as the functional equivalent of elements because they change the maximum punishment authorized from nothing to 5 years, or do we say the statute as written is unconstitutional because it's in violation of Lawrence and there's nothing else there?
Yes, Your Honor. Your Honor, I see I've my time's up. May I continue?
Please answer the question.
The government would request the opportunity to provide a supplemental brief on the issue regarding vagueness, and it is the government's position.
What vagueness?
Regarding whether any elements were missing and whether you should overturn the statute as unconstitutional.
The statute seems anything but vague. It may be overbroad, but it's certainly not vague.
Correction, with respect to whether the statute should be overturned, the government would request the opportunity to provide a supplemental brief on that issue.
I don't want to brief on it.
We can determine if the court wants it. You're always free to submit whatever you want to submit to the court. And if we wish you to do that, we can so order. We're not doing so at this time.
Thank you, Your Honor. In conclusion, this court should affirm the findings and sentence below because the Markham factors are a question of law properly reserved for the military judge, not a question of fact for the members to determine. The Markham factors are not criminal elements, and no court before has determined that they are criminal elements. In the time since Markham was decided in 2004, many cases have found that the Markham factors are a question of law. In order to continue consistency of application, the Markham factors should be found a question of law for the military judge. If there are no further questions from the bench, that concludes.
I just like to follow up on that last point. Why would we have inconsistency if the military judge were to determine whether the charge as alleged under the facts as demonstrated was set forth a constitutionally permissible prosecution and then instructed the members as to what they would have to find on each one of those facts? Why would that lead to, isn't that the normal way in which we achieve consistency in the law?
Well, Your Honor, from the perspective of a trained member of the judiciary understanding how to conduct a constitutional analysis certainly would differ from a panel of members that had been selected, not necessarily of a legally trained background and understanding what each of those elements stood for from a constitutional perspective. In effect, what it does by keeping it with a military judge, a trained legal mind, is you're protecting the rights of an accused. You're actually allowing a military judge to analyze that conduct and determine if this is conduct that even should be forwarded to the members for a decision.
Any other questions up here? Okay. Thank you, counsel, for the government. Counsel for the appellant, rebuttal.
Uh,
The government made mention of the New case. There are good reasons this court should decline to apply New. Primarily, the lawfulness of an order is not an element because, unlike the Markham factors, lawfulness of orders is inferred or presumed. Ironically, and that's why this case is more analogous to United States versus Berry. And ironically, here, the appellant was charged with indecent acts, and the military judge accordingly instructed the members that they could not convict him unless they found that his alleged indecent act was, in fact, open and notorious. But he didn't do that when it came to the charge of sodomy. And his instruction, or I'm sorry, not instruction, but his explanation to defense counsel, when the defense counsel objected to that, was that I thought that there was a military connection, and somehow it would therefore be beyond the Lawrence liberty interest. So in doing so, he did not put forth or develop the record appropriately with the facts upon which this court can conduct an appropriate analysis. If there are no further questions, that concludes my argument.
Thank you, counsel. The case is now submitted, and the court will stand in recess until further order of the court.
All rise. The court stands adjourned until further order of the court.